My world is very small. It's small in area, socially, and temporally. I have no friends. I have no tribe. I'm not a Husker, a Cub, a Bear, or a Gopher. I use the phrase, people don't stick in my head, when I run into people who recognize me, who I have no recollection of. I don't talk to my family. My father occasionally drives down from Minneapolis just to see if I'm still alive. He stays for a few hours and drives home again. But more odd than being alone is the fact that at some point, my sense of time has evaporated. Yesterday, 5 years ago, and tomorrow all have the same emotional resonance for me. Life holds no sense of expectation or anticipation or loss. What I did recently is the same as the experiences of my childhood. They hardly exist, and when they do, they exist in a fog. This may be partially a self-inflicted wound. In high school, I made a conscious decision to shut off my emotions because I was tired of being unhappy and letting others bully and upset me for their own pleasure. At the time, bullying was accepted. After all, boys will be boys. Bullying made me wish that I had an obvious disability. Maybe a cleft palate, a club foot, or even a stutter would do. Anything to help me understand why I was chosen for the abuse. Then it would have been not just because I was me. It would have made the isolation and rejection make sense. My mother would sometimes hold me while I cried and explain that the other kids were just jealous of how smart I was. And in my naivete, the balm did help the wounds some. However, my brothers had conditioned me well to be a victim, and bullies are always good at finding the weak. My brothers were the most efficient. Having installed the buttons, they knew how to push them. Ironically, though, they suffered indirectly. The four of us were all close in age. Looking back, I realized that they often missed out on parties and trips with family friends because if my brothers had been invited, I would have had to have been invited too. And it was easier not to ask any of them than to risk my tagging along, having a tantrum and ruining everyone's fun. Although sometimes they simply went and kept quiet. One of the last times I saw my mother before she died of cancer, my youngest brother let it slip that my family and my mother's friends and their children had gone to the IMAX theater in Minneapolis over 25 years prior, and my family never told me to keep me from being upset about not going. I can still remember my mother waving her hands, grimming embarrassedly, and hushing my brother. The secret had not held. Rather than getting angry, with a fixed smile, I shut off my emotions. I could actually feel those parts of my brain powering down in a wave and the calm washing over me. These traits aren't all negative. As an employee, they're often advantages. Not easily distracted, dedicated, and always on time, my performance is typically excellent. It was in the area of empathy that I lacked. In a customer service position, my manager stressed that I needed to tell the customer that I was sorry about their problems before I resolved them. My sense of honor and honesty prevented me. To tell a customer that you're sorry meant that you had an emotional reaction to their problem. My goal was to solve their issue, but they meant nothing to me. My manager suggested we both take an online autism test. He hit only a few markers. My results showed that I hit most. Being unofficially diagnosed actually made me feel somewhat better. I thanked God that Al Gore had the foresight to invent the bundle of tubes called the internet, so WebMD was there for me when I needed it. Starting over at a new job, a new address, or a new school comes easy for me. Each new situation is the new reality, with no pining for what is lost, since that has ceased to exist for me. In many ways, my past is like poetry. It must be said out loud for me to appreciate it. When a story comes, I'm reminded that my life is more interesting than I think. In high school, I dated the homecoming queen. One summer in college, I worked for a fishing company in Alaska. For many years after college, my default vacation was to fly to France and visit Elizabeth, a French woman I met one summer in college. I met her on a date in my living room. Her date was my roommate. He doesn't talk to me anymore. Elizabeth does. She sends me Facebook messages and is frustrated that I'm hesitant to write back. I've gone to Spain on a whim because the flight was cheap and found myself in Hong Kong during the Chinese New Year for the same reason, eating unidentified foods from carts just because they smelled good. The tastes, smells, and pace of every new occasion fascinate me while I'm there. But by the time my flight lands at home, the memories are shapes with no flavor or color. Soon the trip never happened. It is only in the telling. Once a switch flips in my head, the conversation suddenly turns to a monologue as my eyes fix in the mid-distance stare as the words flow. Telling of when the FBI contacted me to make sure that I wasn't the Unabomber, that's a true story, makes me chuckle as I tell the story, but in my mind, nothing. It feels as if I've always been alone, but when a story will include some of the amazing women who have been part of my tales, I remember the doctors, lawyers, models, and professionals who have shared time and adventures with me. They were all important to me, but only as a part of a tale do they actually exist. At a future event, I may tell some of these stories of meeting Nicholas Sparks and his brother, of not going to the Eiffel Tower on one of my many trips to Paris because Psycho Mary thought it was too expensive. The time I took my father to the Breakers at Palm Beach and the rude comment he made to Susan Lucci about her height while we were sharing an elevator. She is quite petite. Or when on one Thanksgiving, it just made more sense to suture the huge gash in my own leg rather than going to the emergency room and waste 4 hours while the turkey got cold. The pants were not so easily mended. Or while scattering them, my clothes got covered in my dead mother's ashes and puffs rose in clouds as my father beat my wool pants and coats. It still has some humor to it, even though it is now a common trope used both in Frasier and The Big Lebowski. How odd it seemed to me that Rick Barry, an artist I admired, and his wife Sheila, who as death has cast iron legs, were excited to meet me as I was them after months of correspondence. How it struck me when we were in the room and Rick was changing that he wore tighty whities. Boxers seemed so much more appropriate for a professional artist. And why I believe Phil Hale, who did Tony Blair's official portrait at the British National Portrait Gallery, just doesn't like me. Did I tell you that I met Kevin Nealon, the comedian? And his comment was that he liked my shoes, but they were Bruno Mali's. Just saying what these stories are about start to bring them to life to me, like thinking about them never does. When I do tell, the words will flow with the laughter and tears that they bring. I tell stories so that I can feel my past. The binding of the book that is my mind has its spine cracked only when the words flow aloud. The words make my life real. The theme today was to explain why we tell stories. Hopefully this will help you understand why I do. It is when I tell stories that I am alive again. If only I had someone to listen. Thank you.
Vicki Jackson was raised in idyllic Ashton, Wisconsin, and grew up living dangerously, traveling unsecured in the back of station wagons, riding bikes without helmets, and even waiting in the car at the grocery store while his mother shopped. He is lucky to be alive. Vicki read his story at Odes Live Storytelling event in July. The next event is this Friday outside of Coffee Connection in South Sioux City. The show opens at 6:30 p.m. with live music by Devin Cadwell, followed by six community members telling true stories on stage. Admission is only $10. Make sure you get a seat and bring a lawn chair. To learn more, find Ode on Facebook. You can also listen to past stories we have broadcast at kwit.org. The music you're hearing was played live by Melanie Mergen at Ode's last event. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Allie Carson.
I let the walls fall, tumbling one after another, crumbling as they met each other, still unsure of what was to come. I'd been here before, but you've got something more. You can never say the right words to me. You could paint the perfect picture. I'd only half believe. We gotta take time to unwind, to let our guard down, show who you are now. We gotta pleased to meet you. Perfect picture, I'd only half believe.